Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Grammar Girl here. I'm Mignon Fogarty, and you can think of me as your friendly guide to the English language. We talk about writing, history, rules, and cool stuff. Today, we'll talk about the two spellings of ketchup and about how to punctuate questions. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned the current ketchup shortage, and that reminded me that people sometimes wonder about the two spellings of the word ketchup. Although both spellings are correct, K-E-T-C-H-U-P, ketchup, is far and away the most common spelling. Some dictionaries do list catsup, C-A-T-S-U-P, as a variant, but the Oxford English Dictionary says that variant spelling is largely American and arose a bit later than ketchup, which came first. The AP style book specifically recommends ketchup with a K, and a search of word usage in Google Books shows that spelling vastly outpacing catsup with a C in both American English and British English. And I'm sure it doesn't hurt that Heinz, the main provider of ketchup in both countries, also spells it ketchup with a K. The spelling on all those bottles and packets seeps into our minds like ketchup into a dry bun. The history of the sauce in general surprised me, though, because it wasn't always a tomato sauce. The original ketchup was probably a Chinese fish sauce called something like heixiap that British travelers enjoyed while traveling in the East in the 1600s. After returning home, they tried to imitate the sauce and also gave it an English version of the name that came as close as they could approximate. And then, eventually, in the 1700s and 1800s, ketchup came to be a word for many different kinds of sauces. People made walnut ketchup, oyster ketchup, and mushroom ketchup, which you can actually still buy today from a British company called Geo Watkins that was established in 1830 during this time of ketchup sauce variety. The company says its ketchup was, quote, the secret of success for many Victorian cooks when making steak and kidney pies, puddings, roast meats, sauces, and soups, unquote. And if you look hard enough on the internet, you can also find banana ketchup and beet ketchup. The story actually reminds me of mangoes, which I talked about back in 2019, because mangoes seems to have been a term more generally used for fruits that were pickled before it came to refer to just one kind of fruit like it does today. For example, cookbooks from the late 1800s and early 1900s have recipes for pepper mangoes, melon mangoes, and peach mangoes, which are pickled versions of those fruits. But just like the meaning of mango became more limited, the meaning of ketchup has largely become limited too. Today, tomato ketchup rules. If you just say ketchup, people know you mean the tomato flavor. According to Edam Online, it started around 1800 when tomato ketchup emerged in the United States. And by the early 1900s, it was the main kind of ketchup here. So the quick and dirty tip is that you should spell ketchup K-E-T-C-H-U-P. But if you feel like being an adventurous cook, you can pick up some mushroom ketchup and try to recreate some Victorian recipes.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. I think trying to figure out how to just find more time in my day. And you know what? Factor's ready-to-eat meals come to my door and are on the table in 2 minutes. No more grocery shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleanup. Creamy Parmesan chicken, turkey chili and zucchini with ancho lime crema. These chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals are delicious and take no time at all. Just heat them up and savor the good stuff. You can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/grammar50 and use the code grammar50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's the code grammar50 at factormeals.com/grammar50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box where your subscription is active.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Next, we'll talk about how to format questions. You think you already know this, don't you? I wonder if you're right. Almost everybody knows how to write a plain vanilla question like, what's new? They're called direct questions. But there are trickier scenarios. What happens when a sentence seems to be half statement, half question? What if you're asking an indirect question or asking a question that also seems to need an exclamation point? Or dealing with a quotation that contains a question, and so on. I'll answer all these questions. Sometimes even direct questions can be tricky, though, because they can look like statements. And the only way to tell your reader otherwise is to add a question mark. There's a big difference in meaning between he went to the store and he went to the store. Yet the only difference between the two sentences is that one ends with a period and one ends with a question mark. The question mark makes it a direct question that shows surprise. What the heck was he doing at the store? And the Chicago Manual of Style also says you can use an exclamation point instead of a question mark in such instances of surprise. Now, what if you have a bunch of questions and you want to string them all together? I once saw a funny scene in a movie where a dog realizes he can talk, and it goes something like this. You can hear me? Can I have a cookie? 2 cookies? 4 cookies? 20 cookies? Those add-on questions at the end, they aren't complete sentences, but they each get a question mark anyway. It reads, can I have a cookie? Question mark. 2 cookies? Question mark. 4 cookies? Question mark. And so on. They aren't complete sentences, and the rules about capitalization are vague. The AP style book says to capitalize the first letter of each of those add-on questions, but some books say to capitalize the first letter if the questions are nearly a sentence or have sentence-like status, so you have to use your own judgment. I would capitalize them. Now, what about those little questions that come at the end of a statement? You didn't forget my birthday, did you? It's fun to play maracas, isn't it? Bits like did you and isn't it are called tag questions, and they turn the whole sentence into a question, so use a question mark at the end. Do you have a curious nature? Do you wonder about things? When you wonder, your statements might sound like questions, but they're not direct questions, they're indirect questions, and they don't take a question mark. For example, I wonder why he went to the store. That's an indirect question, essentially a statement that you're wondering, so there's no question mark. I wonder if Squiggly would lend me his maracas.
Again, not a question, so you don't use a question mark. Next, where do you put the question mark when you're using quotation marks? Well, it depends on the sentence. Is the whole thing a big question? Or is only the part in quotation marks a question? If the whole sentence is a question, then you put the question mark outside the quotation mark. Here's an example. What do you think Squiggly meant when he said, "The fish swam darkly up the river"? The whole sentence is a question, so the question mark goes at the very end, outside the quotation mark. On the other hand, if only the quotation is a question, then the question mark goes inside the quotation mark. Here's an example. Squiggly ran up to Aardvark and asked, "Where is the chocolate?" The question mark goes inside the quotation mark because the only part of the sentence that's a question is, "Where is the chocolate?" It helps to remember that the question mark stays attached to the question, whether it's the whole sentence or just the quotation. Similar questions come up about question marks and parentheses. If the part inside the parentheses is a question, put the question mark inside. But if the parentheses just come at the end of a longer question, put the question mark outside. For example, if you write this sentence, "We're going to Lori's beach house," open parenthesis, "Where is the beach house again?" close parenthesis. So you've put the question, "Where is the beach house again?" inside parentheses as part of one long sentence. So you put the question mark inside the closing parenthesis. "Where is the beach house again?" question mark, close parenthesis, and then a period to end the whole sentence. But if you write this sentence, "When are we going to Lori's beach house?" open parenthesis, "The one in Maine," close parenthesis. Then the whole sentence is a question, and the part in parentheses, "The one in Maine," is just an addition at the end. So the question mark goes at the very end of the sentence, outside that closing parenthesis. It gets really wild when you start mixing direct and indirect questions together. There are multiple ways to write something like, "The question is, who threw the confetti?" The simplest way to write that is to put a comma after the indirect question and a question mark after the direct question. "The question is, comma, who threw the confetti?" question mark. Believe it or not, though, some style guides recommend that you capitalize the first word in a direct question, even though it comes in the middle of a sentence. "The question is, comma, who threw the confetti?" with the word "who" capitalized in the middle of the sentence. Supposedly, capitalizing the first word in the question places more emphasis on the question, but I think it makes the sentence look disjointed. And if you think that looks weird, it gets even worse. If you flip the two parts around, you can put a question mark in the middle of your sentence. "Who threw the confetti?" question mark was the question, period. It's good to know the rules, but these sentences seem so contorted that I think it's better to rewrite them. I could easily convert the sentence to an indirect question. "Everyone wondered who threw the confetti." Or I could use a colon to make the punctuation less odd. "One question remained, colon, who threw the confetti?" Here's another strange rule. Some style guides say that polite requests, phrased as questions, get a period instead of a question mark. For instance, they recommend putting a period at the end of a sentence such as, "Would you bring me the maracas?" I have always found this odd, since it's clearly a question, but the rationale is that it really is more of a demand masquerading as a question. You don't expect the person to say no. Rhetorical questions are similar. When you don't expect an answer, or you're expressing surprise with statements that sound like questions, you can use a period or an exclamation point. "How great is that?" and "Who knows what they were thinking?" are examples of the kind of questions that don't need a question mark if you aren't really asking something. Finally, when you're asking a question in surprise, such as, "What?" the Chicago Manual of Style says you may use both a question mark and an exclamation point, but that it often isn't appropriate in formal writing. Instead, pick the terminal punctuation mark that's most appropriate and use that one. Ask yourself whether your statement is more of a question or more of an outburst. I've always found that solution unsatisfactory, which is why I'm happy to see they allow the dual punctuation marks if you really need them. And I believe this is new in recent editions. And I also love an obscure punctuation mark that was designed exclusively for asking questions in a surprised manner. It's called an interrobang, and it looks like an exclamation point superimposed on a question mark. Sadly, you also shouldn't use the interrobang in formal writing, but I love it when I see people use it in email or on social media, and most word processing programs let you insert it as a special character. And on that fun note, I hope I answered most of your questions about how to punctuate questions. Finally, I have a Familect story from Betsy.
Hi, Grammar Girl. This is Betsy from North Carolina, and I have a story about a word that only my family uses. So you know when you're a baby and your parents will say, oh, say goodbye and give a kiss, and you put your hand on your mouth and you go, mwah. Well, we are Italian, so we would say it more like muoi. And then eventually it started to sound like we were putting a G on the end, so like muoing. And then we stopped doing the actual like muah and movement part, and it was just muoing. And we would say muoing, muoing. And then we would started saying it a little bit faster and a little bit a few more times, and it started to sound like gamoing, gamoing. So now that's our shorthand for when we're leaving and we're kissing. It's gamoing, gamoing. And that's just, my cousin commented the other day, I have a big family, so we all do it. My cousin commented the other day, she was like, our kids are going to be so weirded out when they hear us say gamoing, gamoing, and none of their friends say that. So there you go. Gamoing, gamoing.
That's great. Thank you, Betsy. If you want to call with your family word story, you can leave a voicemail at 83-321-4-GIRL, and I might play it on the show. And be sure to tell me the story, because that's always the best part. I'm Mignon Fogarty, better known as Grammar Girl. You can find articles that go with each podcast segment at my website, quickanddirtytips.com. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook as Grammar Girl, and on TikTok as The Real Grammar Girl. Thanks to my producer, Nathan Semmes, and that's all. Thanks for listening. Good morning, good morning.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.